A reading from the Gospel of Matthew. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, "You shall not swear falsely, but carry out the vows you have made to the Lord." But I say to you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by earth, for it is God's footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the sovereign. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let your word be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything more than this comes from the evil one. Hear what God is saying to the people.
Thanks be to God.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It is for me a great honor and a great privilege to stand before my peers and my professors and all of the other friends of God that are here this morning. And I'm just glad in my heart. I got a text message from my pastor this morning, and so I am, in the words of Barack Obama, fired up and ready to go. I would like to take a moment to dedicate today's sermon to a young lady who none of you know, and most of the world doesn't know. Her name is Queenie Bird Kennedy of Louisville, Kentucky. We call her Tasha. Tasha is a woman who has loved much. She has extended her time, her home, her heart to keep children safe off the streets and out of harm's way. Even when she herself was in crisis, she has raised her own children and helped nurture so many more. Recently, she adopted a child she has cared for since the age of 3 days. I'd like to say to Tasha this morning, I see you, and God bless you for loving our children selflessly. That is justice. That is love. Now, as I look in our bulletin this morning, and you look, you will see a title that is not the title of my sermon. It was the working title that I was thinking about, and so, in true Baptist style, I'm going to just love doing this anyway. So our title this morning is, "What Shall We Say?" First, let's talk a little bit about the Gospel of Matthew, where we find today's text. Matthew's gospel is a fine example of the spirit of Sankofa. Sankofa is a word in the Akan language of Ghana that translates as "reach back and get it." Matthew looks back to the past as there are numerous and implicit and explicit references to Abraham, Moses, David, and the promotion of the Torah. And indeed, it is the richness of our history that gives meaning to our present journey. According to author and scholar Dr. Amy Jill Levine, in Matthew's church, membership is based not on descent, not on geography or background, but on baptism, rather, and faith. And especially as Jesus states, "Doing the will of my Father that is in heaven." Thus, Matthew's theme of higher righteousness. Loyalty to Jesus is paramount for Matthew. And he refers to the community as ecclesia, or simply the church. Not Jewish, not Gentile, simply the church. I wonder if we mind being identified as members of the church today. Do we regard our walk with Jesus as something worth talking about? Is it outdated, quaint conversation, or does it really have meaning? These are questions to ponder as we move forward. I would like to bring special emphasis back to the particular part of our gospel reading that we went through this morning, verses 33 through 37, and we're going to spend the majority of our time right there. And I would like to quote an idiomatic translation from the Message Bible. And it reads, "And don't say anything you don't mean. This counsel is embedded deep in our traditions. You only make things worse when you lay down a smokescreen of pious talk, saying, 'I'll pray for you,' and never doing it, or saying, 'God be with you,' and not meaning it. You don't make your words true by embellishing them with religious lace.
Yeah.
In making your speech sound more religious, it becomes less true. Just say yes and no. When you manipulate words to get your own way, you go wrong." The text here gives reference to meanings that can only be understood thoroughly through the lens of Jewish culture. And I was thanking God that I had Dr. O'Brien when I read this text. During my sermonizing preparations, I sought to understand what the text is saying from the inside out, meaning I chose to dig a little deeper to understand what it was about oaths and promises in Jewish life that gave such significance to our text. The writer explains this issue in light of everyday conversation, meaning that the Torah permitted oaths within the context of ordinary dialogue if they were either false or disrespectful. In that light, I discerned it would be precipitous for me to see for myself what Jewish tradition had to say about making promises and oaths. I decided to consult Jacob Neusner's translation of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is, for those who may not know, a written work that was intended to sustain the oral traditions of Judaism. It is also the first major work of rabbinic literature. For all practical purposes, it is the how-to book that gives meaning to the 613 commandments that are contained in Torah. In Demai, the second chapter, 3, it states, "And he should not be profuse in making vows or in lebanon." And Nevarim 1 records several instances of the sorts of vows that are binding, those that mean nothing, those that are perhaps situational. For example, "He who says, 'Not unconsecrated produce shall I not eat with you,' is bound." So essentially, it appears to me that the rabbi is saying that there are times when you need to make sure that your words do not betray you. There are times when you and I will say yes and no, and we will need to mean it with everything that is within us. The people that believe in us are dependent on our promises, but most of all, God is watching and listening to each word we say, and God knows whether those words are spoken from the heart with true intention or whether they are just another form of manipulation to satisfy our own personal agendas. When I first glanced at the text today, those many weeks ago, I was left rather unaffected We communicate each day with how we live our lives. We say that either we matter and are worthy of the call that is before us, or we say that this will be a road of convenience, that we will only do enough to make it seem like we are fully engaged and serious about what is before us. My grandmother, I wish you could have met her, was a woman of wisdom. And after I had made and broken some profuse promises about God knows what, she sat me down at a kitchen table. And Naomi, you might remember a conversation that goes a little like this. This is what she said to me. She said, it was important for me to make sure I keep my word because it relates to my own reliability. And this was the quote that came forth. I hate a liar. If you lie, you will steal. If you steal, you will kill. I hate a liar. End quote. That was Helen Jackson's lesson from the School of Life, Integrity 101. So out of the call to be more, you and I have started this journey to be better and to live authentically. Our religious traditions make promises to us each day in their marketing campaigns. They want the world to believe that they are open and ready to love anybody that walks through their doors. They tell us they have open minds and open hearts and open doors. They convince us that those words, whoever you are and wherever you are on life's journey, you are welcome here. They convince us that those things are truth. They sing songs that proclaim the words, we are Christians and the world will know it by our love. But love runs out. Openness turns to closed doors, and depending on just where you are in life's journey, you just might not be welcome. Those initial promises, they sound good, don't they? Like the snake oil salesman's pitch, they sound like they just might be the one thing that we've been searching for. But all too often we are left still searching, devastated, and alone. So what shall we say today? How do we move forward from this day? How can we mark the significance of Matthew's message to us? Persons receiving this message in Matthew's day, according to scholar Reverend Dr. Thomas Bahace, were those who lived on the margins, those who were peasants and slaves and subjects of the Roman Empire. And the effects of colonization were fresh and hurtful memories. But they came together as the church, and certainly some of them were risking their very lives to be a part of that community. Many years ago, a group of men, women, transsexuals, drag queens, queers, gays, lesbians, sissies, dykes, fairies, faggots, or as some of us like to call them, those people, decided that they were no longer going to be silent during the constant harassment by local empire. It was time to say the words that they meant and be willing to die for them. In the early morning hours of June 28th of 1969, the people who were at the Stonewall Inn that night took a stand and made a statement for justice. There was no one to impress. There was no one trying to manipulate the words of others. Their actions on that night shall we say? I propose that we say the lives of trans men and women matter, and it is unacceptable that a trans person is murdered every 29 hours. We cannot let them die in vain. We will raise our voices, we will educate our community, we will demand stricter penalties for guilty perpetrators. I propose that we keep knocking on the doors and speaking to our churches who cannot see our worth, they can't see our dignity, they can't see our beauty. We challenge them to embrace a more progressive and inclusive theology that